Not sure the enthusiasm of the speaker is going to go down all that well. Stunned into near silence for a moment, this place. Jude Bellingham's third goal of the World Cup, the first goal Mexico have conceded at the World Cup. Anthony Gordon held for the advantage with England. Bellingham finds Kane, across to Bellingham! It's two!
Hello and welcome to the Standard Football Podcast, World Cup 2026. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Tara DeFellin.
Hello.
None of whom have been banned for this podcast. We're here now at the midway stage of the round of 16. Yeah, the teams are being eliminated left, right and centre, and a few players are being eliminated. Or are they? Some of them are actually being brought back to life. You think, oh, well, maybe we're not going to see him again in this tournament. But then they rise again. Now, if we sound a bit jaded, we are recording this on Monday evening. We always record on Monday evening. We don't change things just because it's a World Cup, you know. And, of course, England played very, very, very early this morning. It was meant to be 1 a.m, the kickoff time. Then it wasn't. Then it was 6 p.m. on Sunday. Then it wasn't. Then it was back to 1 a.m. again. And then they changed it again last night when everyone was just about getting ready to think, oh, yeah, I can do this till 3 o'clock now. Then they had to wait until 2 a.m. for it to start again. But, Jan, it all worked out well in the end. Everyone was so worried about the altitude and everything. But, no, it all worked fine, didn't it? It all worked out fine.
Yeah, it did. I was worried about how they were going to cope with the altitude. I remember because my first World Cup that I remember was Mexico 86. And I remember the narrative at the time was all about the altitude. And I think England and a load of other sides went out there early to acclimatise. But of course, England this time didn't get the opportunity to do that. If the fixture had moved a bit further forward, that probably would have been potentially even more detrimental to England because they would have had less time in the locale to be able to adjust. Things obviously must have come on a lot, not just in football, but generally since 1986. I mean, I'm unrecognisable for one thing. But I would imagine that if you want to try to acclimatise or at least be prepared for altitude, there are technologies and medical understandings that are far better than they were in 86. So maybe it's not as big a deal, although still a substantial impediment, I would imagine, as it was in the past. But certainly for the team, it didn't look like they were being bothered by that at all. I mean, they were still going strong right to the end and were, yeah, ultimately victorious. It was a great win. Great win. Did very well.
What has changed is there wasn't any Viagra around in 1986.
And of that's course, it, yes.
England were cleared. I don't know if any of them did, but were cleared to use the dick pill for its other, well, its original intention. Its original intention is the blood thickening agent. So, yeah, that was an option open to them. As I said, I don't know if any of them took it, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe that was the secret ingredient. Terry, did you battle sleep to watch any of it live? Or did you watch it like I did? I watched it almost live. I got up about 4:30 just to think, right, I want to watch the whole game, try not to get any spoilers and then go and hit it in one hit.
No, I watched it live.
Wow.
I missed the Norway-Brazil game. That was the trade-off.
I
slept through that game and woke up and then went back to sleep when they told me that it was delayed by an hour. Woke up again. Yes, 2-3 o'clock in the morning is not a natural time for the human body to be awake. You acclimatize to it. Obviously, you adjust to it over time, but not straight away. I was on a WhatsApp group with some mates and we were all reporting feelings of mild panic watching the game, like palpitations and like early onset, like of having a panic attack. It's that combination, I think, of anxiety about the game itself but also extreme fatigue about being awake at a time where you're usually in your deepest sleep. So we all had these same symptoms. It was quite strange. And then we all felt a little bit better about it because, well, we're not having panic attacks. We're all just watching England at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, what did we think of the game? England won 3-2 in the end, down to 10 men for a large chunk of the second half as well. Very positive performance, wasn't it, Terry?
It was a brilliant performance, Graham. It was an unqualified, brilliant performance. I have no doubt that the 606 mob called in and said that it wasn't good enough and that they should have played more beautiful football. And they can't get away with playing like that against, I don't know, Norway, Argentina, whoever. But given the circumstances, given the altitude, given the fact that it was in the Azteca playing Mexico, a team who rarely lose, and I don't think have lost there for years, I thought that they put in a performance of tremendous character, which you don't often see with England. And then to go down to 10 men and then still couldn't find a way of winning that game, I thought was absolutely fantastic. Now, I'm not going to stink the place up with views that perhaps in the last 10, 20, 20 minutes, maybe more, Mexico, I think, kind of ran out of ideas. I'm not going to say stuff like that. It may be true, but I don't want to cheapen the achievement because it was a massive achievement. I think that England did very well to quieten the crowd at key moments during the game and just hold their nerve through what must have been an extremely difficult, very, very challenging environment. I thought it was terrific. I thought it reflected well on both teams, actually. Thomas Tuchel in his press conference said he's almost sorry that Mexico are out because he just described them as being a wonderful team, a wonderful country with wonderful people. And that was nice. You know, it's like you'd like to hear a bit of grace in victory. But need a little bit of time to digest it. But it's up there with some of the best England performances of all time, I suspect. If it had been against Mexico in Miami or in Canada, it had been another venue and it had been like that, then maybe not. But I think the context, the venue, the atmosphere, the environment, I think that that's up there as some of the best. And certainly one of the best World Cup performances for an England side in many a year.
I'd agree with that. It was an important performance, and especially the fact that how they controlled large portions of the game, even without the ball. Personally, I think they used the altitude against Mexico. It's meant to be their advantage. But of course, if you're chasing the game, as Mexico were for pretty much an hour of that game, that must have really put some weight in their legs. I just thought we played that really, really well. And you're right, they ran out of ideas in the end. And England didn't have to do anything more than keep a low block, an organised low block, again, rotating the defence as we've had to do in every game so far. But it worked. I mean, Stones came on and did really well. Dan Byrne came on, and I thought he did really well. He did, yeah, actually made a good shout for starting, I think, against Norway, because we need height against those guys because they are giants.
Spence as well. Spence was magnificent time he came on as well.
All of them performed really, really well. Of course, the exception being Jordan Henderson, who managed to get himself booked and injured without even getting on the pitch. Well done, Jordan. Well done.
Only a lad from Sunderland could even possibly make that happen. I say that being a lad from Sunderland.
But I was really impressed with the performance, Jan, because at the beginning, I thought, oh, hang on, is it going to be one of those games? Because we ended up getting a player sent off. I thought it was going to be a much, much more niggly game, especially when Declan Rice got booked after, what, one minute? But I think we managed to control that, even in like the febrile atmosphere of the stadium. It didn't seem to boil down to us having to maintain our discipline. I think there was a level of discipline that we maintained and we kept it. And we didn't let the niggling housery from Mexico get to them.
Yeah, I agree. Just on that sending off, seeing Quansah's face when he was ultimately sent off when the player was pulled back for the foul, the look in his face was, oh my God, not what have I done, but you could see him feeling the weight of what had happened there. And I really felt for the fellow because he's a fine player. And I think that it was unfortunate because I genuinely think through no fault of his own, his calf kind of hit the ball and kind of moved him up a bit. So it kind of exaggerated the tackle. I don't blame the referee for sending him off. I think that, you know, that's fine. But after that, after seeing his face and then seeing the togetherness and how England kept it together and within 10 minutes it's got a goal through Kane's penalty, shows a real level of togetherness, as I said, but motivation and just mental fortitude. Especially, as you say, given the environmental conditions, given the conditions, the atmosphere, and the weight of 40 years of that stadium hanging over England as well. Which, to be fair, I think that the Azteca maybe was a bit of a weight around Mexico's neck as well, because they hadn't lost there in so long, as Terry said. So there was a lot going on that wasn't just the football as well, which made it even more interesting. But yeah, to echo what you guys said, I think that was an absolutely brilliant performance. And you're right, you might see people or hear people saying, got to be better if you're going to play France. And well, maybe you do need to be. But if you can go up against one of the host nations who were incredibly motivated, incredibly skillful, and were going for it, and come out the other end with a really positive result and a brilliant performance, then you've really made yourselves contenders to be in with a shout, really. So yeah, it was really encouraging and enjoyed it immensely.
They're up against Norway in the next round. Norway, who, I don't say got past Brazil, but they saw Brazil off, really. Mm. Brazil really didn't have, as far as I was concerned, didn't have much to offer against them. And Erling Haaland scored twice. Do you think Norway in Miami is going to be an easier game for England? Is it going to be more like a Premier League game?
I was thinking that earlier today about it being more like a Premier League game. I mean, Haaland will know all of the England players, a majority of them, and they'll know him as well. There's been a lot made of Norway. There were a lot of big headlines about them. And don't get me wrong, knocking Brazil out of the World Cup is an achievement, whichever Brazil side's in front of you. So we shouldn't take that away from them. Brazil threw a lot at them early on, but I don't know whether it was Norway locked them out or Brazil just ultimately didn't have the quality to make it count. But it was Endrick, when he came on, I thought, oh, this would be interesting. When he came on, it felt like something changed there. Because he came on almost with his first touch, was clean through, wasn't he? And then he put it wide, which, again, I felt a lot of empathy going on with me for the last few days. I really felt for him because he's such a young lad and clearly an amazing talent. But he ultimately fluffed that one. But something changed with Norway then. I think they thought, well, look, you know, we've got less than, 20 minutes? I think it's about 15 minutes to go. And then Haaland scored that incredible header. So, to answer your question, I don't think it's going to be an easier game. I think each game presents its own unique difficulties. And I think Norway, as you said, they're a big, big, strong physical side. But then again, we've played against big, strong physical sides already and overcome them, or at least got a result. It's going to be tough, but I think in its own different way. I feel a bit more confident, if I'm honest with you, about England beating Norway than I did with Mexico, for reasons I've gone through this week and last. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, you know, this is a seriously good Norway side. But if England played the way they did this morning, then they should be able to really give a good account of themselves. So I think it's going to be a really interesting one.
Yeah, it's odd, Terry. When I looked at the way that the bracket was going, and it was us versus Mexico, and then if we got through that, it was Brazil or Norway. I looked at that and I thought, what? From the way that these teams have been playing, I think Norway are the strongest team out of those three. But I'd rather play them than anyone else in this, because I think there are trapdoors all over playing Brazil and Mexico. You can be the better team against those two and still lose. But I think against Norway, I don't know, am I just stuck in the 90s, Terry, thinking that it's going to be a Premier League match, this one?
Yeah, there might be an element of that, Graham, because I mean, also because the Norwegian football for so many years identified itself so much with the English game. The Norwegians have been watching English football for decades.
Yeah.
That's why there are so many Leeds fans in Norway, because they were watching the first division back when Leeds were a thing back in the 70s. So yeah, I think we're informed by that kind of cultural view. But if you look at that lineup, I mean, yes, there are Premier League players. There's got a few Premier League players in there. Odegaard and Haaland, obviously. Oscar Bob is there. There's a guy from Wolves who plays for them. There's a Brentford player who played in that last game as well. But there's also players from Benfica. There's players from Spain. There's two lads from Bode Glimt, who are suddenly a very, very dangerous team in Norway. There's a flavour to that team that maybe challenges that stereotype. But the two key players I would suggest in the Norwegian attack are going to be Odegaard and Haaland. And those are the two players that we're going to have to really, really keep an eye on. I think the rest of them, we could possibly characterize them as being a fairly mid-table European first division club side, not too dissimilar to Brazil, with the exception, much like Brazil, is that they've got a couple of world-class players or top-class international players. You know, I think Norway, obviously with Haaland and with Ødegaard in particular, I think those are two absolute top-class, with Haaland probably being, yeah, world-class, you know, an absolute world star. The benefit to England, of course, is Haaland's game, and they know Haaland's game very well, and they know that he drifts off and can be quiet. I mean, he's not actually drifted off at all. He's always watching, always waiting, and ready to pounce. And the moment he gets the chance to pounce, he usually actually scores. And so it makes him incredibly dangerous. But we won't forget about him, I don't think, or at least we won't deserve to win if we do forget about Haaland. So I, too, for those reasons, feel more confident about playing Norway than I do about Brazil. But again, I think that again, is informed by the culture rather than any kind of reality. I think there's plenty of reasons to fear Norway, and I am fearful of them. I just guess I feel more comfortable playing another UEFA side rather than the common ball side, because I think the referees in this tournament might be a little bit more disposed towards teams from the Americas.
Yeah, there was a fine example of that just the day before when France started the round of 16 with their game against Paraguay. Paraguay fresh from their defeat of Germany on penalties. So we're perhaps hoping to actually cause an upset against the far and away favourites in this competition, France. But Terry, could you describe the match in your own words that happened? I use the term match loosely there.
Somebody compared, it might have been Ian King, who compared it to a sort of like 1970s intercontinental final match between a South American club and a European match. I mean, it was absolutely world-class housery. And I think we can now use the term housery.
Well, I think we can, yeah. Yes.
I mean, it's passed into parlance at the BBC.
Yes.
They think it's okay, and we can use that. By the Paraguayans, who just used every opportunity to be as snide as possible, diving around any slightest contact, and they are hitting the floor, off the ball fouls, tactical fouls, and all with the clear vision of the referee, who just seemed, if I didn't know better, guys, I'd say he put a fiver on no yellow card for Paraguay in the game. Obviously, he didn't. He clearly didn't. Because he is no doubt a man of great integrity. However, I bloody wish I had. Because you'd have got, here's your double, lads, for this one. If you got a time machine, go back in time. One, stick £1,000 on no yellow card to Paraguay during the 90 minutes and Michael Olise to get a yellow card. And you will be coining it in, lads. Coining it in. We'll easily cover the cost of the expense of developing a time machine.
If that had happened in the Premier League, there would have been a spot-fixing investigation there, wouldn't there?
I mean, in all seriousness, and again, without making any accusations whatsoever, it would be prudent to investigate that result, because that was peculiar, at the very least. When you consider the Paraguay didn't play too dissimilarly against Germany, but they didn't use anything like as much housery.
No.
I think that tells you something. It tells you that they thought they could beat Germany, but they couldn't beat France without resorting to housery. Which, I'm not going to be some pious European and suggest, oh, I'm just so disappointed in them. This is who they are and this is how they play. And if that's how they think that it should be done, I think it is a shame to see something like that happen. But at the same time, I was enraged by watching the game and found myself in a really strange position of wanting France to win, because I thought that Paraguay were just so despicable. But as an Englishman, you're just like, this game is breaking my brain. And I've seen a couple of games in the World Cup that have broken my brain. I've watched so much football down the years. It baffles me that I can still watch a football match that breaks my brain. And only the World Cup can do that. And that's why I keep watching it. And I just thought that if they had sort of like reined back on the housery that much, they probably would have lost the game by a wire margin. And I think that that's just the way that they saw it. And you could be personal and say, oh, they were frightened of France. They probably were frightened of France. I mean, there's part of me that thinks, like, really, you know, down with this sort of thing. But also, I wouldn't necessarily want Paraguay to change in that respect. I suppose the only thing that is worth saying is it really the referee, I think, probably does need to be sent home if he's not been sent home already, because that is negligence. I mean, there was plenty of stuff going on there that he was well within his view and he just didn't want to know. He just wasn't interested in booking anybody from Paraguay. It was extraordinary. But the other side of it, of course, is that actually it masked what was actually an impressive defensive display by Paraguay. They actually played pretty well in that game. And you absolutely do not ever want to play those guys ever again in any kind of competitive match. And, you know, while it's obviously not a shame that they're out of the tournament because they're awful, it is a shame that they're out of the tournament because they're awful.
Yeah, and Paraguay were comedically evil in that game. Endearingly evil, I thought, in certain respects, even down to like the scuffing up of the penalty spot.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah.
You almost expected them to like resort to painting tunnels on the side of walls and things like that, or going through the Acme catalogue to see what traps they could lay. They were like Dick Dastardly and Muttley combined, weren't they? They were having the best time, it looked like. But that said, France, an exemplary performance from them, because they didn't give in to it, did they? And they had every right to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm surprised, actually. I mean, I'd never seen, I'm sure he has lashed out in the past, but Mbappe lashed out at one point, at which point, and the commentator, you know, kind of, I suppose, fed me this, but it was coming to mind anyway. But it was kind of like, this Paraguay got them where they want them here. When that happened, and it turned into a kind of a mini handbags thing, and everyone had to be separated. But this one caveat to this, in that I draw the line at players being hit, like physically hit with a forearm across the chest, or even though a slight, you could say a punch or slap on Koundé off the ball, that I think is beyond housery. But that said, the rest of it was absolute beautiful, a chef's kiss, wonderful. And to be fair to them, it worked for large parts of that game. France didn't have a shot on target, I think, for the first 15, 20 minutes. And when they came at them and they did concede shots on target, they did everything they could to lock them out. And, you know, that could have easily gone another way. France are clearly, they're the favourites for a reason. They are amazing. But they were stifled in all of that beauty and creativity and individual brilliance that we've seen from them was completely stifled in that game. And if you're up against a team that's that good, and you look around and go, well, we aren't that good, then you have to resort to other tactics. And they did. And I thought it was great. And they nearly got away with it, and good for them. It happens all of the time in football, up and down the country, across the world. It's part of the game. And sometimes you have to try and win ugly. And that's exactly what they were trying to do. So yeah, I've got no problem with it at all. Thought it was wonderful.
Actually, just to push back slightly on the handbags, I think it's possible that Mbappe knew what he was doing there.
Mm.
It's possible that he might have thought, well, I know the way this is going. So actually, maybe by bringing matters to a head and causing a ruckus, it might focus the officials' minds,
yeah,
and maybe keep them on the lookout for more trouble and more shenanigans. And it was a push. He pushed the guy, but it wasn't enough to get him into any kind of trouble, I think. It would take a brave referee to send off or book Kylian Mbappe for something like that. He's Kylian Mbappe, right? I mean, he's the best player in the world. So I think that there was an attempt to try just to try and escalate matters and bring matters to a head, because for as long as Paraguay were able to work beneath the sort of like perception of the referee, then all manner of things could get done. But by escalating things, by saying, look, this is a big deal, you know, let's make a big deal out of this, they're showing their teeth. I did think it was hilarious that Michael Olise, who got booked for just, like, I don't know, waving a finger and the guy falling over and rolling around. I mean, I say it was hilarious. I was enraged at the time, but I look back on it now and it's hilarious. And I guess the only thing that worries me is if the kid picks up another yellow, he could get suspended, and that would not be fair. I wonder if there's any way of overturning that. I'm not sure.
Well, suspension, I don't think you should worry about that. Just get the president to phone up and say, hey, I want to see him play in the next game. Gianni, sort it out for me. And ball FIFA guy would just rubber stamp it. That's what happens now, doesn't it?
It appears so.
Yeah. It would appear so that bans, suspensions, they don't mean a damn thing anymore, because We found it yesterday, wasn't it? Is it yesterday? It was only yesterday that it broke?
It was yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That Florin Balogun, the American striker, who's had a fantastic tournament so far, well, he was having a fantastic tournament up until about an hour into the game against Bosnia in their round of 32 match. And the incident itself was a loose ball. The Bosnian defender, which was Muharremović, forgive the pronunciation there, managed to get between Balogun and the ball. Balogun rather clumsily attempted to win the ball from behind and stood on the defender's ankle. Went to VAR. The referee went to look at the screen and sent him off. Now, people were talking about, wait, is that a one-match suspension or is that two-match suspension? But no, it turns out it's a no-match suspension because the president of the United States has reportedly stepped in himself and asked for Gianni Infantino to fix it so that Balogun plays against Belgium tonight in their round of 16. Well, there's a lot to unpack here over what's happened in the last couple of days. Well, Terry, I'll start with you. This is shocking, isn't it?
It is shocking, Graham. It is shocking. I don't know whether or not really that was a straight red. I don't know whether it was or it wasn't. It certainly looked like it when I saw it, but I've encountered opinions from people who've said that it shouldn't have been.
So have I, actually. I've encountered opinions, and they're all wrong.
Cogent opinions.
They're all wrong.
Yeah.
Entirely.
I felt...
I've been gaslit by US fans online.
Oh, no.
I was thinking, maybe it was a bit rough. Maybe it wasn't. So I went on iPlayer today to have a look at it again. It's awful. It is awful. It studs down the Achilles. He steps on his foot. The ankle twists. And people say, oh, yeah, it always looks bad in slow-mo. No, this looks bad at full pace.
Mm.
There is very, very little difference between this and the tackle made by the Qatari player Madibo that broke Kone's leg. And he got a five-match ban for it. And there's very, very little. If you have been reading opinions from people whose opinion you respect online, listeners, then go back and check the videos off because they're Americans and they're wrong. Sorry, carry on, Terry.
Yeah, so it's not just US World Cup AstroTurfers as well. And it was also, that was a view of Thomas Tuchel, who as a coach probably is thinking about, you know, putting himself in the position of a coach if it was one of his players. Also possibly thinking about an opportunity of an appeal for Kwanzaa's red card as well. So I suspect that's in his mind now. But irrespective, in that respect, it doesn't matter because what happened is that the guy was sent off.
Yeah.
That is a matter of absolute fact. And when a guy is sent off, he gets some kind of suspension for a period of time, depending on the offense. It's at least one game. And that was what was supposed to be happening with Balogun. He was supposed to be missing one game. They invoked Article 47, which is a FIFA rule which allows FIFA to suspend a ban. The precedent, there is precedent, but the most recent precedent is, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, who was sent off against the Republic of Ireland in November. He was banned for 3 games.
Yes.
And FIFA decided to suspend the ban. So that means that Cristiano Ronaldo was able to play the first 2 games of the group stage of the World Cup. And there, I suspect, is the grounds for the precedent that would have taken. Now, obviously, it helps if the president of the United States is on good terms with bald FIFA guy and is able to exert his considerable influence and pressure to get Article 47 triggered. But that is the mechanism that I suspect. And this, of course, is where, I mean, we didn't talk about this when we talked about it going into this game. I mean, I'm not saying that we should have done, but very few people mentioned this, that Ronaldo actually, technically speaking, it's somewhat controversial that he was playing in those two first fixtures because he had actually been sent off and he should have been serving a suspension. But everyone chose, I think, probably for good, strong financial and commercial reasons, and also because they didn't want to get yelled at by Ronaldo stands online, probably that it was best to not mention this. This, I suspect, is the root of it. It is the end of days. Mm. It feels like it's the end of days because the precedent has now been set. Maybe not in other competitions where, you know, standing orders might be different, but in FIFA competitions now, at what point can you say, well, look, hang on a second, there's the precedent here. This guy, so let's use an example, Michael Olise. There was that yellow card was bullshit. But if unless I'm mistaken, if he picks up a stray yellow card in the next game, is that still the case where you then miss the following game?
Yep.
That's still the case. So there's no reason why the French could say, well, hang on a second, given that that first yellow card was nonsense and should not have been given, we think that he should have that ban suspended for the duration of the competition on that basis. And it would be difficult to then make an argument for that. So you've now got this chaos of the idea of lawfare determining suspension. And you've also got the complete and utter undermining of the referee's judgment, right or wrong. And that is immutable. And it doesn't matter how strongly or how much you jump up and down and stamp your feet about the rightness or wrongness of the red card. It is the referee's decision, and the referee's decision is final. If that's what's happened, then that's what's happened. And it indirectly, I think, further undermines the referee's authority, which also feels like end of days. And it's just nakedly corrupt.
Yeah.
FIFA have done far worse things in this World Cup and other World Cups. Don't get me wrong. People have died because of World Cups. So let's get that into perspective. But what is so alarming about this is just the absolute nakedness of the whole thing. Nobody seems to give a toss. They just say, yeah, we're just going to do this. And that's where it all feels like the integrity of the competition is being undermined somewhat. Now, you know, the news dropped. Everyone was outraged. Then England played Mexico and it was a fantastic game and everyone went, ah! And it's not that it's been forgotten about, but we are reminded why we watched the World Cup. But goodness me, they're running out of a lot of goodwill. I think this could end actually in surprisingly bad ways, particularly for Infantino. I'm not certain that this was a wise move at all. I mean, is he that good, really?
Well, there is that. I think we were talking about before about Paraguay being endearingly evil, and FIFA just showed us what true evil is actually all about. One thing I would say is the Ronaldo decision, which I think was also wrong, but there have been precedents before with that.
Yes, there have.
When players have gone into World Cups on suspension and the suspension hasn't carried. And so that wasn't something that was unique to Ronaldo. So, and I know people that are up in arms say, why wasn't anyone complaining about this? Because it's happened before. But this is entirely different. This only the only time this has happened before is in 1962, back in Chile. If you really want to go back to those sort of times for your precedents, then fine, you do that. I think this is a dangerous, dangerous precedent.
Yeah, and it comes to something when Sepp Blatter, former president of FIFA, called this a questionable decision. Which, you know, that's what I think when you know you've hit rock bottom there. Well, yeah, he would. He's a certain amount. He does. But what I find really disturbing is that the president of the United States went on TV this afternoon and was interviewed, or well, asked about this, and qualified himself by saying how much he knows sports and how he was such a very, very good athlete, which, of course, no one would doubt for a second. And then throwing shade on the referee, saying the referee's a bit suspect if you knew his past. And this all starts to sound very, very familiar from the president's playbook. Having qualified himself to comment on it, he also said at the same time that he didn't know what a red card was and had to ask somebody, which is when he picked up the phone and said that if the decision hadn't gone the way that he wanted, then he would have claimed any subsequent Belgian victory would have been rigged. Now, I think we all have heard that before from the president's mouth. And this is where I hope it ends. I really hope it does end here. But you've got to now look at the outcome of America's games going forward and wonder how much influence is potentially being put on those. Now, there are some fine professional players playing for the US national team, and I know they all want to win fair and square. But the point is, it feels like this is potentially out of their hands. How far is this going to go? The president wants to be happy. He wants to make sure his World Cup is a success. Is he going to throw shade on some other decision for some other official? Infantino shouldn't even pretend for a second that he's above this guy's wrath just because he threw him a fancy gong. I'm really concerned about where this might go. And I don't think it's just about one player getting to play and then it's all forgotten. Because if America lose by some contentious decision, then you can expect this playbook to be rolled back out again. And that is really concerning.
Now, I'm hoping for a Romelu Lukaku hat-trick tonight, and Leandro Trossard pitching with a couple of goals as well. I hope USA get absolutely stuffed. And then I hope whoever replaces Gianni Infantino, because I think he should be replaced immediately, banned USA for a long time for government interference, because I think today they banned Nepal for government interference. So, yes, you couldn't make it up.
Echoes of Italy 34, really. I mean, none of us were around in 34, but I mean, it is said that Mussolini asserted so much pressure on the officials that helped what was admittedly a very good Italy side to win the World Cup in 34.
The referee had dinner with Mussolini the night before the final.
No way, really?
Yes!
I had dinner with the referee, he's a really nice guy. We talked about China.
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 Yeah. Well, Belgium are capable of beating them. The game against Senegal was just insane. I mean, we talk about games, Terry, that blow your mind. That was ridiculous, wasn't it?
To be in so much control of a football match and just be apparently cruising to the end of the match and 2-0 up, Senegal just completely blowing it in those final few minutes of normal time. And then obviously to then lose in extra time, I could not believe my eyes. I thought I've never seen a team so obviously in control of a football match then so obviously not be in control of a football match within a matter of minutes. Again, it was the other game that I watched in the World Cup the last 7 days that genuinely blew my mind, which is great. It just goes to show. I mean, I think US are going to win this game because I don't think Belgium are that good, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there is that.
I think
there
that's
is
the
that.
Truth of it. Who will they play? Is it Spain/Portugal in the semi-final?
It is, yes. That's who they will play in the quarterfinal.
In the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
So then it all gets tricky because then you've got this combination of the possibility of himself or Spain. And then things get proper nasty because obviously Spain, like if it's Spain, I think it'll be Spain, they're really, really good side. And also they are not going to take shenanigans lying down. And that could get political pretty quickly, actually, because the Spanish government are quite comfortable standing up to the US. I think that has got potential to escalate and become a proper political World Cup. But I think you're right. I mean, I want to echo what you said about the US. I don't think that what you're saying is theatrical at all. I mean, the FIFA's rules on political interference in federations are well known, and that is as blatant as you can get. Infantino should stand down or he should be removed from his position. And I think that at the very least, the US Soccer Federation should be suspended. I mean, I'd stop short of kicking the US out of their own tournament because I think it'll just cause more trouble than it's worth. But I mean, I think that this is sinister.
It is. Well, as I said, we are halfway through the round of 16 now. Quarterfinals will start next week. And you have England playing Norway. You've also got France playing Morocco, which should be a belter as well. The other ones are still yet to be sorted, but it's already building up to be a fantastic set of games for the quarterfinals, and there'll be one game with either USA or Belgium in there. Who knows? Who knows? Well, what's happening in our prediction game? Well, I'm glad you asked, because we've only got a few teams left. Well, Jan and I only have a few teams left. Terry's got loads of teams left. Actually, Terry has been shipping teams over the last few days that went a lot deeper than they should have done. So he went from his very, very clear lead and he's now in third place.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, we'll see how that goes in the last couple of days. I think I may have to rejig the scoring system, you know, just to get in the whole FIFA vibe, I think. It seems like the thing to do. Let's mix it up a bit. Make it more interesting, you know. It's all about the entertainment, isn't it, lads?
Sounding to me like it's a bit rigged. Unless I win, I'm just going to complain it's rigged.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly what you should be doing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what your listeners want to hear, isn't it?
It's exactly what they want to hear. They tune in every week to hear me just spout on some old right-wing bullshit. I'm happy to oblige. Rules don't matter anymore, Grim.
No, it doesn't. They don't matter anymore. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! We'll be right back.
I mean, I'd stop short of kicking the US out of their own tournament because I think it'll just cause more trouble than it's worth. But I mean, I think that this is sinister.
Any closing remarks on that?
No, yeah. I think leaving it on sinister is absolutely perfect.
Sinister.
It's a lovely word as well, sinister. I quite
it
like
is.
The word.
Yeah. The other word is chilling. But I went with sinister.
Sinister's better, I'd say.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a bit online, though, isn't it? Sinister.
You think?
Yeah.
Really go online, so I'm...
It's
I
a
don't...
bit 2012 outright kind of sinister.
Bizarrely, it means left, doesn't it?
Does it really?
Yeah.
Yes. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh. I just thought it meant sinister.
In Italian, it's sinistro.
Sinistro.
Yeah. It's